Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narotamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tito Jayam Udirayet Nasta Prayeshwa Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. We are reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, the description of the Varnashram system. And while they're writing the verse on the board for today, I would just quickly go over yesterday. Sridhar Prabhu gave such a nice class about the famous verse prior to the one this morning, verse number 27, which reads, Acharya mam vijnaniyan navamanye tikarhi chit namartya buddhayasuyeta sarva deva mayo guru. One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods. So this topic of Varnashram in this chapter takes a sudden turn towards the topic of Guru Tattva. And as Sridhar Prabhu was pointing out yesterday, it is kind of an abrupt turn. Why it would be in the middle of the description of the Brahmachari is a little difficult to understand. Of course, Krishna is speaking this directly, but part of it can be understood in that the Brahmachari is particularly dependent upon the spiritual master in all aspects of life. So the role of the guru is further discussed in the verse we're going to cover this morning. And I wonder, do we have enough devotees with phones with the verse on it, or shall we wait another minute for... He's just bringing the board. Okay. All right. Okay, my apologies for being late. I had an assignment due for the GBC this morning. Had to be done. I thought Kirtan also goes a little long. Usually you have Prabhupada lectures on Monday, right? Probably we should just go ahead with the Prabhupada lecture. What do you think? Anyway, I'll speak as you ask me. I was in Los Angeles once when Srila Prabhupada was expected for a class, and there were lots of devotees were gathered in the temple room, all eager and excited to hear Prabhupada give class, Bhagavatam class. And then, at the last minute, he announced he was not going to give class. And he appointed another devotee to speak on his behalf. Can you imagine how that devotee felt? So the first thing he said was, Prabhupada said we have to be ready to speak on a moment's notice. Okay, very good. So, this morning I'm just going to do text 28. So, Vishwambar Prabhu will be speaking tomorrow morning on text 29. Right? All set? Okay. Sayam Pratar Upaniyam Baikshyam Tasmai Nivedayet Yachanyad apyanu gyatam upayunjita samyatam sayam pratur upaniyam bhaksyam tasmai nivedayet Yachanyad apyanu gyatam upayunjita samyatam. Please chant.
Sayam pratur upaniyam.
Sayam pratur upaniyam. Bhaksyam tasmai nivedayet. Yachanyad apyanu gyatam.
Upanishasana
upayunjita samyata sayam pratur upaniya baikshyam tasmai nivedayet yachchanyadapyanuyatam upayunjita samyatam sayam pratur upaniyam baikshyam tasmai nivedayet yachchanyadapyanugyatam upayunjita samyuta. Matajis? Vaishnavis? Anyone else like to chant? Okay, synonyms. Sayam, in the evening. Prata, in the morning. Upaniyam, bringing. Baikshyam, food that is collected by begging. Tasmai, unto him, the Acharya. Nivedayet, one should deliver. Yat, that which, cha, also, anyat, other things. Api, indeed. Anugyatam, that which is permitted. Upayunjita, one should accept. Samyata, being fully controlled. Translation. In the morning and evening, one should collect foodstuffs and other articles and deliver them to the spiritual master. Then, being self-controlled, one should accept for oneself that which is allotted by the Acharya. Please repeat. In the morning and evening, one should collect foodstuffs and other articles and deliver them to the spiritual master. Then, being self-controlled, one should accept for oneself that which is allotted by the Acharya. Purport. One who desires to receive the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master should not be eager to accumulate the paraphernalia of sense gratification. Rather, whatever one is able to collect, one should offer at the lotus feet of the Acharya. Being self-controlled, one should humbly accept that which is allotted by the bona fide spiritual master. Every living entity must ultimately be trained to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but until one has become expert in the techniques of spiritual life, one should offer everything to the spiritual master, who is completely realized in the process of worshiping the Lord. When the spiritual master sees that the disciple is advanced in Krishna consciousness, he then engages the disciple in directly worshiping the personality of Godhead. A bona fide spiritual master does not use anything for his personal sense gratification and entrusts to his disciple only as much material opulence as the disciple can properly offer to the lotus feet of the Lord. The example may be given that when an ordinary father tries to train his son in business and other material activities, he entrusts to the son only as much wealth as the son can intelligently engage in profitable enterprises without foolishly wasting the father's hard-earned money. Similarly, the bona fide spiritual master teaches his disciple to worship the Lord, and an immature disciple must simply deliver everything to the lotus feet of the guru, just as an immature child does not keep a personal bank account, but rather receives maintenance from his father, who trains the son to be responsible. If one cheats oneself by defying the order of a bona fide spiritual master or Krishna, one certainly becomes a non-devotee or sense enjoyer and falls down from the spiritual path. Therefore, one should be trained to serve a bona fide spiritual master and thus become mature in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation again. In the morning and evening, one should collect foodstuffs and other articles and deliver them to the spiritual master. Then, being self-controlled, one should accept for oneself that which is allotted by the Acharya. So again, this is the principle of worshiping the spiritual master, specifically for the brahmacharya. So I wanted to talk a little about this brahmachari life, about the meaning of the word acharya, how acharya relates in our lives in two ways, and also about the principle of accepting what one is given. So this is specifically geared for the brahmacharya. One should accept what one is given. This is because in the course of one's life, going through other ashrams, one can be content to live in a very simple way, in a very dependent way. Okay? Even in the grihastha ashram, where one can, not only can, but must accumulate resources, one who is trained as a brahmachari can live in a simple way, like the lotus leaf resting on water but not being affected by it. So this training is compulsory and this application is compulsory for all ashrams. Now, all those who take to spiritual life have this principle to consider. Srila Prabhupada was once asked by a professor who is a specialist in Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the most, Swamiji said, what is the most important verse in Srimad Bhagavatam? Does anyone know what Prabhupada answered? Ete chamsa kalopam, some good guess. That's the Mahavakya, but that was not what he answered. Any other guesses? Kamasindriya, close. Indriya Pridya, that's close. Same, right chapter. What's that? Dharmasya Hapyavargasya. Yes. Very good. We could count on Mukundamala, the walking Veda base. Yes. Dharmasya Hyapavargasya Narto Utai Upakalpate. Spiritual life should never be performed for economic development. And if in the course of discharging spiritual life one happens to get economic development, one should never use it for sense gratification. Interesting, isn't it? Prabhupada would select of all the verses, this one he considered most important. So it's the same principle that is being described here. The brahmachari can collect vigorously and profusely, but if the brahmachari believes this is now mine, or I will take my cut so that I'm taken care of and give the rest, this is a faulty mentality. So the discipline, the strict discipline of being able to collect unlimitedly, and then giving everything to the guru. This is applicable for all devotees in all circumstances. And it is, again, perhaps the most important principle of all in applying the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam to our lives. So there are many ways. There's a natural human tendency to want to have things both ways, right? If you collect money, if you have money, then, okay, I want Krishna to have money, but I also want to have my share. There's a very extreme example of this, a story of a man who is a very big businessman, very successful businessman. It made so much money. Then all of a sudden his business started faltering and he had to spend his savings and then he was just almost on the verge of bankruptcy. So he went to the temple and he prayed, Krishna, please save my business. If you just save my business, I promise you I will sell my house and give all the proceeds to the temple. So then, miraculously, his business started picking up again. And once again, he was very prosperous and wealthy and happy. But then he remembered his promise. So the next day, there was an unusual ad in the newspaper. House for sale. 6 bedrooms, 6 baths, 3-car garage, 3 acres. 100 rupees. 100 rupees. So people were calling, is there some mistake? No, the house is 100 rupees. But there's one condition. What is that? You have to buy my cat also. Well, how much is your cat? It's 4 crores. So before long, somebody bought the cat and bought the house, and the man went to the temple and he put in his 100 rupees. So this is the natural condition. We want things both ways. But the brahmacharya is trained so strictly that it is 100% for Krishna. You know, Krishna is not so much interested in what we are putting on the collection plate. He's interested in what is still in the wallet. He wants to know, what are we holding back? See? So when the brahmacharya is so perfectly trained, there's a complete reliance on surrendering everything to the guru, because the guru will call the disciple and take care of his needs. Even Krishna himself submitted to this discipline, didn't he? He was ordered by his guru to go and collect firewood. And so even though the circumstances were very difficult, he did it along with Sudama. And they were trapped in a terrible storm and spent the night outside. So in the morning, their guru found them, and he was so pleased with their sacrifice. And he blessed them. So this is the idea, to get the mercy of the spiritual master by surrendering everything, by being dependent on his mercy. I wanted to share with you this story. You know, I'm a very insignificant disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and I was not close to him. I didn't have intimate personal instructions from him, but I did get to see him on some occasions. And on one occasion, my party leader, Satsarup Maharaj, he was introducing all of us on the library party to Srila Prabhupada in Chicago. And, you know, I was 20 years old and just in awe. As a Christian boy, I felt, well, I'm like seeing Jesus. and when Srila Prabhupada looked at me, when Satsarup Maharaj introduced me, he had this look in his eye that made me want to merge into the floor and just kind of vanish. And many of my god brothers and god sisters had this experience. Prabhupada had a certain look, which it was as if he was looking right through you. And when he looked at you, you felt very sinful, very contaminated like that. And so many of us had that experience. But so for many years, I didn't really understand the meaning of that. And then Prabhupada's servant, Shruti Kirti Prabhu, explained that when Prabhupada would be introduced to new disciples, he would immediately be thinking, how can I engage this person in Krishna's service? Krishna has sent me this person. How can I engage this person in Krishna's service? That was the analytical look in Prabhupada's eye. Not looking whether this person is qualified or unqualified. Rather, how can I engage this person? So it took me many years to understand that. That when we approach the spiritual master, we may not have much to offer. But he's just trying to kindly engage us in Krishna's service. That's why we need the spiritual master. As Krishna says, one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee. But one who claims to be the devotee of my devotee, that person is actually my devotee. So we have this responsibility in regards to the acharya, to find an acharya and then surrender to the acharya and put ourselves in his hands. Arjuna was so confused in Bhagavad Gita until he came to this point. Shishyasteham sadimam tvam prapanam. I am suffering due to miserly weakness and I cannot figure out what is best for me. So please, take me as a blank slate. Please instruct me. This requires a setting aside the false ego. It requires setting aside material aspirations. It requires sunya, undivided devotional service. Anya bilasita shunyam, jnana karmadya navritam, anukulena krishnanu shilanam, bhaktir uttama. Rupa Goswami says, this is pure devotional service. When there's no contamination, no sense of doing religion for the purpose of making money, no sense of doing religious activities for the sake of becoming highly respected, no sense of doing religious activity for the sake of gaining so much knowledge, but rather just for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. This is pure devotional service. This brahmacharya means to come to that point. And this is why it's the beginning of the Varnashram system. Many years ago in Toronto, Srila Prabhupada was asked, is it a fall down for a brahmachari to get married? And Prabhupada replied, what is the question of fall down? Brahmachari is already the lowest position. So to be brahmachari means to take a very humble position like this. I'll collect any amount of money, any amount of nice food, but I won't keep any of it. Now keep that lesson in mind as we go on to another related topic. So the first thing we need to do is find a spiritual master in our life and surrender to that person. As Sri Dham Prabhu was explaining so nicely yesterday, you know, Krishna glorifies the guru for this reason. One should know the acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods. Even more than all the demigods, the acharya is representative of who? Yes, of Krishna. What is the word? Ashraya vigraha. Right? The form of the Lord to whom one can surrender. So this is a heavy responsibility, isn't it? So when we approach a spiritual master and surrender, the spiritual master engages us with heavy responsibilities. If we're actually surrendered, then he will actually engage us with heavy duties. I had two godbrothers who joined the temple at the same time. One of them was an architect, highly educated. One of them was a heroin addict. So they used to get letters from Srila Prabhupada. The architect would get letters like this. You rascal, why have you done this? This was Sarabi Maharaj, who was designing the temples in India. Why have you done this? I told you to do that. You are nonsense. The other devotee would get letters like, you are a very good boy. Keep on chanting Hare Krishna. So the heroin addict, he could understand. The one who's getting the chastity, he's more advanced. So even when we surrender to the guru, we have a debt to the guru. And that debt will be proportionate to our ability to pay. You know, it is not that it's the same for everyone. For example, when Krishna, after surrendering to Sandipani Muni, completed his education, Krishna and Balaram, Sandipani Muni knew that these are not ordinary students, these two boys. So he gave them they said, how can we repay you? What can we do for you? And he gave them a very difficult task. He said, our son was killed on the seashore, and we would like you to retrieve him. We have never found him, what happened to him. So you please go and retrieve our son. And Krishna Balaram very gladly took this service. So they went to the seashore where the boy had disappeared, and they learned there was a demon in the shape of a big mollusk in the waves that would feast on human beings. So they found out this demon who was named what? Panchajanya. And killed him. And after examining the dead demon, concluded that no, the boy was not there. And so then Krishna took the shell from this demon, which is another lesson in and of itself. Even the demon, Krishna engages in service. And then he went to the planet of Yamaraj, where all the dead souls were gathered. And as he approached that planet of death, Krishna blew his conch shell, his new conch shell. And when the vibration from that conch shell resounded through hell, it affected everything. It messed up everything. All the ru-ru dogs that were feasting on the flesh of the damned, they stopped barking and they stopped eating. And all the souls who were boiling in oil all of a sudden felt very cool. And all the trees, the leaves on the trees in hell are all razor blades. But they all fell. Everyone was liberated just by hearing the sound of Krishna's conch shell. So there Krishna and Balaram found the boy and returned him to Sandipani Muni. So Sandipani Muni then blessed them that their reminiscence of all of their lessons would always stay fresh in their mind. So this is the point, that if we have a lot to give to Krishna, Krishna will ask, the Acharya will ask a lot of us. If we have a little to give to Krishna, the Acharya will ask a little. And it really doesn't matter whether we are Hanuman or the squirrel or the spider, whichever version you choose. And whether our contribution is big or small, relatively, it is all small in Krishna's perspective. Krishna does not need anything from us, but we need to give everything we have to Krishna and not hold anything back. This is the reason for the brahmacharya training. So what is the natural outcome of a person who lives as a good brahmachari, enters into grihastha life, lives as a responsible grihastha, giving as much as possible in Krishna service, and then has a family, raises a family for Krishna, leaves the family at the appropriate time? What is the natural outcome for such a person living the whole life in Krishna consciousness, or even bypassing grihastha life completely? Where does that take one in relation to the acharya? What is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yaridaha taika Krishna upadesh amargyai guru hoi tara edesh. So one who follows the acharya becomes an acharya. That is the natural progression of things. Now, when Srila Prabhupada was very ill in 1977, he had many god brothers and friends, but he really wanted to be surrounded by his disciples. That was his preference. So his young disciples were gathered there from around the world. And so one gentleman came in, and who was like an ISKCON friend or life member. And he began conversing in Hindi with Srila Prabhupada. He thought that none of Prabhupada's disciples knew Hindi, but some of them did, so they knew exactly what he was saying. And this is recorded, this conversation. Swamiji, after your departure, who will lead your movement? Who will be the next leader? That was his question. Who will be the next leader? And Prabhupada immediately answered. Anyone know what he answered? The good follower becomes the next leader. And then, completely understanding this man's mind, he said, "You can also." So Srila Prabhupada did not, he said, he did not have faith in any one of us, but he had faith in all of us. And that was his desire, that all of us, in a cooperative way, should carry on the movement he had started. In fact, that whenever we have worked in a cooperative way, ISKCON has flourished. Whenever we have gone outside of ISKCON for guidance, or in some way concocted or tried to get political, then ISKCON has suffered. So just following in the mood of giving everything makes ISKCON a success, makes Prabhupada's seva a success. This is what Prabhupada is asking us, to give everything according to our capacity. So in 1975, I was fortunate to be in Mayapur, where Srila Prabhupada was giving a morning class. And in this class, he said, it was about Advaita Acharya. So I'm debating. I've written about this in a Vyas Puja offering poem. Should I read the poem or tell you the story? What would you prefer? Poem? All right, it's always easier to read something you've already written. All right, so this was 1975. Let's see. Excuse me just a second. It's a poem called I Have No Opportunity. Yeah. In Mayapur in 75, the hot season had just arrived. As morning coolness faded fast, we listened as you gave the class. This was in the old temple room in Mayapur where, you know, all the dioramas are now, the Murtis, bas relief dioramas, Chaitanya. That was the only building in Mayapur, that lotus building, and the temple room was on the ground floor. And there were about 200 of us there, mostly from America, mostly with mismatched socks. Young men and some young ladies, and a very ragtag group, if you can picture the scene. Adi Lila 113, Advaita, same as the supreme, Acharya, one who always shares Chaitanya's movement everywhere. So Prabhupada gives us this definition of the Acharya, means one who understands Krishna consciousness, one who practices Krishna consciousness, and then one who teaches Krishna consciousness. These three things. You said, my guru was most pleased to see more and more devotees. Not only him, but Krishna too himself does what he asks us to. So Prabhupada is saying Krishna delivers, or Krishna asks us to deliver others, and then he himself does it. And he quoted this verse. Paritra naya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharmasam stapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Then he went on, quoted another verse. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata gorau tasyeta katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanan. Unflinching faith in both the Lord and the Acharya bring you toward proficiency in Vedic texts completely and in all respects. And when you follow cent per cent, you too can teach and represent the past Acharyas in our line when you mature in course of time. Yare deka tare ka Krishna upadesh amar agyai guru hoy tare desh. So he quoted this verse also. Then he went on. To be Acharya is not tough. Just follow yours and soon enough, wherever you live in this world, you'll broadcast Krishna's sacred words. You simply say what Krishna said without concoctions from your head or mimicking like parrots squawk. Assimilate. And then you talk. Our devotees are, I would guess, 10,000 worldwide, more or less. When you become acharyas then, you'll multiply yourself by 10. 100,000 soon shall be 1 million acharyas, you'll see. 1 million then will soon expand to 10 million. That is my plan. Acharyas in such quantities assure us of no scarcity. Since many, many are required, you organize and be inspired. Just follow your Acharya's words and try to make yourself mature. Although this age is dark indeed, sincere disciples shall succeed. Remain sincere, that's all I ask, and make this present birth your last. You are all young, not old like me. I have no opportunity. And suddenly you fell in trance, aloof from outer circumstance. Not knowing quite what else to do, 200 of us stared at you. You can hear this tape of Prabhupada speaking. And then he just stopped speaking. And the room. So silent was the temple hall, one could have heard a petal fall. As bliss absorbed you, I sat still. But now it's time to do your will. This is one. This is one of these few times where Prabhupada manifested the ecstatic symptoms described of the Uttama Adhikari in public. But the vision of 10 million acharyas in the world made him so ecstatic that he just entered this blissful state. And it was electric. I mean, everyone in the room could feel this incredible sense of bhakti coming from Srila Prabhupada. So at that time, Prabhupada had about 10,000, he estimated 10,000 disciples. Actually, if we count Prabhupada's direct disciples, he had 4,000 disciples. Prabhupada initiated 4,000 disciples, about 2,500 men and 1,500 women. And so that represented at the time about one out of every million people in the world. So Prabhupada's disciples were one out of a million. So now, conservatively in ISKCON, we could say we have 100, 150,000 initiated devotees. Okay, and so that means that it's about one out of every 50 or 60,000 people in the world. That's a lot of progress, from one out of a million to one out of 50,000. It's a lot of progress, right? But if we had 10 million acharyas, that would be, what is the number? One out of every, like, few thousand. So in every village of the world, there would be an acharya. So this was Prabhupada's vision, you see. So we are all familiar and we're very convinced about the first half of our relationship with acharya, that we need one. And we need to surrender to one. And we need to give everything. But the other half is a little murkier. How are we going to become acharya? Right? And this is, there's a lot of reasons for this. A lot has to do with the chaos that ensued in ISKCON after Prabhupada's departure. Somehow out of that, the position of acharya became elevated to a very lofty degree. And somehow, some of the young men who took this position kind of went to their head. There was one temple where the acharya had gold-plated handles in the bathroom sink. Meanwhile, the devotees were barely getting khichdi to eat. And one disgruntled devotee painted on the door, "All for one and none for all." So remember this lesson from the verse about the brahmachari? Giving everything, keeping nothing. This is the same lesson for being an acharya. That when you are an acharya, when you're an initiating guru in ISKCON, people will give you respect. Right? People will say, "Oh, this is such a great person." And if you take disciples, then those disciples owe their whole life to you. Right? It can be very intoxicating. But the same lesson that applies to the brahmachari approaching the acharya also applies to the devotee who becomes the acharya. Whatever is offered, I take that and I give it to my guru. Whatever respect I'm receiving is respect really meant for my guru, and I'm giving to my guru. That's all. Transparent via medium. Not like the Indian post office where 10% stays with the postman. So everything to the acharya, all the way through, even to the post of being the acharya, that means that one has become the next leader by being a good follower. Does that make sense? So because of all of the chaos after Prabhupada's departure, the role of acharya is just so inflated, even today, that most devotees think, "I could never do that." But that was not what Prabhupada wanted. And that's why I wrote this poem, because I really want to make this point. Prabhupada wanted everyone to take this service. And we don't have to have thousands of disciples. If we have that capacity, wonderful. But if we only have capacity for 10, that was the average figure Prabhupada gave. And Gorkhishor Das Babaji had how many disciples? One. So whether it's one or 1 million disciples, it doesn't matter. What's important is that we offer that service to our guru in course of time. Frankly, you know, the confusion about the role of acharya also came from some people advocating after Prabhupada's departure and after some of these initial gurus fell down. Then out came the speculative philosophy that only Prabhupada should give diksha in ISKCON. And none of his disciples can if they also become siddhas, uttama adhikaris. Now they did not define how you would tell who is an uttama adhikari. One devotee suggested we should invent an uttameter, like something like a Geiger counter. When you put it near, cha-cha-cha. But short of that, we can understand, just like in college, in the department, there's a PhD who is the leader of the department, chairman of the department. And under that PhD, there are many TAs, right, teaching assistants. And some of them are PhDs, but most are not. Most are PhD candidates. But they're working under the direction of the department head, and therefore the incoming students take most of their instruction from them. So this is really the role of acharya in ISKCON. There's no way to tell is somebody an uttama adhikari or a madhyama adhikari. But Prabhupada writes, you can have gurus, even kanishta adhikari, he says, although you will need supplementary instruction from someone more advanced. So I'm an old man. I was getting this lecture. I was a young man. Now I'm an old man. And I'm just seeing that you, as young men and women in ISKCON, please try to see, look at your life. If you're going to devote your life to this movement, then think about you're going to be an acharya at some point. Whether you have one disciple or a million disciples, it isn't the point. But for me, I started giving initiation 8 years ago. The best training I had was being a parent. In fact, Rishabhdev puts these two services on the same level, Lord Rishabhdev in the fifth canto. Gurur nasasyat, swajano nasasyat, pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat. No one should become a guru, a teacher, a father or a mother, unless what? One can deliver one's dependents from birth and death. So it's a very similar responsibility. Although being a diksha guru is better because you don't have to change diapers. You know? And people come to you more or less fully formed and wanting to hear and wanting to learn. So the point is, you don't need to have many disciples. But if you are willing to give that service to some, there is some jiva out there who is looking for you. Prabhupada called it a transcendental arrangement. Just like we all feel by transcendental arrangement, we have met our spiritual master. So if you are willing to do that service, Krishna will send people who need it. And we need so many people. The GBC did some analysis estimating that the 80 initiating gurus in ISKCON right now would each have to take about 20,000 disciples to meet the expected demand in the next few years. But, you know, there's only 80, 2% of Prabhupada's disciples. I think your generation should do better. You should do better than we did. Just what I'm just saying this morning is please don't be afraid of it. It's just not that big a deal. It's a natural outcome of a life spent in Krishna consciousness. So please get that in your mind. This is going to be part of your life if you continue being a good follower of your Guru Maharaj. All right? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Discussion? Prabhuji. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for enlightening class. regarding Prabhuji, as you were talking about, you never met Prabhupada and you just saw him from a distance. So in a disciple's life, there are two things. One is a general instruction and one is a personal instruction.
Yes. But it's the general instruction and the personal.
You take it from the spiritual master, whatever he's saying. But generally, a particular instruction comes to you, like a guru is saying something and you're doing something.
Yeah.
So most of the time, a disciple expects, okay, if I get this, then I can do like that. But now in your case, now you have taken a general instruction as a general instruction, but made it as a personal instruction.
Yes.
That general instruction transformed into personal instruction. How this transition happens?
Very good question. So how does one take the general instruction and turn it into a personal instruction that is one's life and soul? Yeah. Everyone aspires for some personal instruction from the spiritual master. When I was a brahmachari, that was my dream. And then once I got to serve lunch to Srila Prabhupada, I thought, this is my chance for personal association with my spiritual master. So I took in the lunch plate, offered it. Prabhupada looked at me and said nothing. And then he rang the bell. I came back in, took the lunch plate. He said nothing. The next day he said to a servant, why are so many men staying back from book distribution to cook for me? He didn't like it. So what for me was so important, I realized was not at all his desire. So taking the general instruction and making it personal means that we are actually thinking what will please the spiritual master, not what was going to please me. Even if it appears to be a pure desire. I just want to associate, right? I just want to ask some personal question. So Prabhupada would often say, I've given everything in my books. If you want to know me, read my books. See? So Prabhupada gives many instructions. Which one is our personal instruction? That requires some intelligence. It also requires some mentoring. You know, the guru in the ashram, the classical brahmachari ashram, examines the students and says, okay, you're a kshatriya, you're Brahmin. He evaluates their nature. So in the same way, we should consider ourselves very analytically. What is it that we love to do for Krishna? Once a disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, what do you want me to do for Krishna? And Prabhupada said, what do you want to do for Krishna? Anything you say, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, I asked you, what do you want to do for Krishna? So he thought, he said, I would like to make madungas that don't break. In those days, all we had very fragile clay madungas. So Prabhupada said, so do it. So that he invented the Balaram madungas, that devotee. So the point is that we have to find some particular service that we want to do and offer to Guru and Krishna. That's our responsibility. And we may need help to meet it, but we have to find it. We can't just be wondering generalities. I'm a devotee. We need to be meaningful specifics. I am doing this for Krishna, this service for Krishna. This is my service, this is my life and soul. That's part of maturing in Krishna consciousness. It's part of self-realization. What is it that I'm actually good at and that I love to do and that is appreciated and valued by Guru and Krishna? To find that out is self-realization. And it may take a while. My brother Charu once asked Srila Prabhupada, when you start chanting Hare Krishna, how long does it take to become purified? Prabhupada said, about 40 years. So that's why, utsahan nischayat dhairya. We also have to be a little patient. But that's self-realization. Find out what is my particular service to offer to Krishna. Okay? Then the general instruction becomes a personal instruction. Krishna in the heart reveals in time. Thank you. All right. Any other questions, Prabhuji? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a wonderful class. I heard some time ago that if we take care of present devotees nicely, then Krishna will send more.
Yes.
So will you please elaborate how to do it? Like?
In our temple in Gainesville, Florida, where I serve, from 1996 to 2006, only one devotee had joined. God brother, many of yours, Nam Kirtan Prabhu. He serves in Tallahassee. Just one devotee in 10 years. So when my wife and I took charge of the temple, we decided to try a few different things, to try to make the atmosphere more like it was in the very earliest temples. And much to our surprise, devotees started coming. We have had actually 300 devotees have either joined or come for training in the last 10 years since we started doing things the way Prabhupada did in the early days. So we have a prayer we offer to the deities. My dear Lord Chaitanya, if you send devotees, we promise we will take care of them. That's the deal. He has to send. We can't make devotees like Frankenstein in his lab, you know. Krishna has to inspire in the heart, and then they will come. So we're ready for them. See, like, when a spider is hungry, what does he do? Or she? What does a spider do? He gets busy making a web. Does a spider chase insects? No, the spider just makes a situation where the insects can come in and be taken care of. In the same way, we can create an environment that is so conducive for new devotees to join. It's just like when conceiving a child, the mother and father chant 50 rounds and they pray and they try to attract a particular pious soul to take birth. So the consciousness in the temple is such that we're ready for new people. Here's where you stay. Here's your supervisor. Here is your schedule. Everything is ready. Then Krishna will send people just magically, and he keeps on sending them. So I hope that answers your question.
So one more question regarding this. So, like, when we are taking care of the someone, like, what are the things should be in our consciousness? Like, basically, like, new people come. Also, there are old, like, people who are there for some years.
Mm.
So sometimes we hear about like midlife crisis and all these things. So like, how we go about it? Like,
this is also a very good question. In other words, care, devotee care doesn't mean you just come in, you get nice attention for 6 months, and then you're all set and whatever. So this requires more advanced training. It's an early stage of this discovery of one's personal service. One has to. After one gets the basics, you know, there's a lot of excitement learning the basics. Then one has to enter a more challenging service in most cases. So giving people new challenges. Prabhupada instructed his disciples, you have to give them new challenges and make their service individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. Always fresh challenges so that the person feels they are progressing, they are enlivened. And that means the older devotees cannot be attached to their niche, right? In material life, there's something called the Peter Principle. Have you ever heard of that? Are you familiar with that? The Peter Principle means if you work for a company, you keep getting promotions until you get to a point where you're not competent any longer. So you're promoted to the point of incompetency, and then you stay there. So the same does not apply in spiritual life. That there's always something more we can do for Krishna. And that may mean just something personal like doing art or writing or teaching or gardening or child care. It's just something we enjoy and we're good at. Every devotee needs to come to that position where they're independently engaged in something they love to do voluntarily and they spontaneously want to do. That takes some time. But if the older devotees are attached to particular services, then everything becomes congested. So older devotees have to be willing to let younger devotees. The whole process of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, is training others. So we should learn. Tamal Krishna Maharaj told us, Prabhupada told him that you be a jack of all trades and a master of one. So you learn everything, do everything until you find that one thing that is really defining who you are in Krishna's service. Okay? All right, last question. One last. Yes, Prabhuji. I'm sorry, is it all right we go over time a little?
Thank you. you said about if you want to like go out or increase our preaching, so many spiritual masters they are required.
Yes.
But we also see that right now the current situation, which is there, that so many disciples are to one particular spiritual master, mm-hmm. so he is not able to give personal time. But we also see in Vedic view that a spiritual master was there to guide personally.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Pandava, we see Dhaumya Rishi was always there.
Always there.
Dronacharya was only military part, but he is not glorified Dhaumya so much, but he was always there with Pandavas.
Yes.
In all through their time, difficult times.
Yes.
But in current situation, we see so many disciples to one particular guru and they are not getting proper instructions or proper guidance.
Hmm.
So how in our current scenario we can go through this? Can you share your wisdom?
Well, you have to bear in mind that most of Prabhupada's disciples did not get personal instruction. He put us in the care of his elder disciples. So it's not mandatory that one has to have personal instruction from a guru in order to succeed and to progress in spiritual life. So the answer to your question is very much up to the individual. There should be options. See, so some people will feel so much faith and they receive so much inspiration from their guru, even from a distance, like we did with Srila Prabhupada, most of us, that we're completely content to be connected in that way through the Vani. You know, others may feel like, I really need a lot of personal help and a lot of personal attention. And so we need to find gurus who have lesser disciples, lesser numbers of disciples. And both are all right, you see. And when we also become gurus, we may have huge numbers, we may have small numbers. See, that's, either is fine. So there's a lot of freedom, a lot of individuality in Krishna consciousness. And this is the myth I'm trying to destroy this morning, that guru means thousands of disciples. It may be for you, but it may mean 5 disciples. That's all right. It doesn't matter. But somebody needs you. Some particular jiva needs you to help connect them with Krishna through the parampara. So whether that is through, whether you have so many disciples and they just read your books and they just see you from a distance and they rarely get to talk to you, or whether they're sending you an email 3 times a day and 2 WhatsApp and 3 texts also. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.